Hello and welcome to the third podcast on the Alan Gordon Recovery Program, the program that Alan Gordon LCSW recently donated to the TMS Wiki. Previously, in our first session, we did an overview of the entire program. In the second section, we jumped around a little bit, but we focused primarily on the first step of the program. And now we're going to cover steps 2 and 3 in the program, in the first part of the program. Of course, while we say that we're going to talk about that, we will jump around, and if people have something which is interesting to them to say, it's all about the discussion, and the discussion really comes first. So if we end up talking about something totally different, that's completely fine as well. It's all about getting something where people are talking about stuff that matters to them. Unfortunately, we do have some difficulties with scheduling, and so we opened the phone lines up at 8:30. And an old-time member who's joined our podcast a number of times in the past, and we've loved to have her along, has joined us, and she says she's doing pretty well.
I am.
Yeah.
My name is Lynn, and I went through the whole program unknowingly because there was no break in the text online about that associated with the content. But in the meantime, I went through the whole thing and I was exhausted. It took me a long time and I went through all the exercises and I have never been better. I mean, it's really helped me. I really identified with everything and I need to go through it a couple more times at least, step by step. But I went through the whole thing and I have been pain-free for now a week. And my whole aura has changed, and it is a really good program. So for anybody who tries it, do it. And I wish I had it in print because I don't like reading on the computer. But the computer has its benefits, like the discussions, and the discussions were really good. The discussions were good. Everything. It really helped me a whole lot, a lot. And I think I go through it a few more times. I will. It just helped me a lot. There's a few things I couldn't do the buddy program. I couldn't do the bully buddy thing. There's a few exercises that I couldn't do that I need help with. But given, so I'm not 100% better, but given what I could do, it really helped me so much. So given that, I'm going to say goodnight.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm really good to hear. Can you tell us a little bit, before you go, I'm sorry to not let you go, but can you tell us what resonated the most with you and what you're going to work on? Do you have a sense of what you want to work on going forward?
Yeah, the things I couldn't do. I couldn't do the inner buddy exercises.
Okay.
And I couldn't do the things that required writing. I'm not a writer. So I did make my list, my list, but I wasn't really good at it. I'd rather speak to somebody than write. I don't like to write. I'm not a writer. So the things that required writing, the things I couldn't do so well. The inner body thing, the mind thing, oh, that really set me up. That really helped me so much.
The mindfulness thing, right?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that helped me with everything. And I did that a few times, and that really, oh, that helped me so much.
What is it, like meditation, quieting the mind?
No, it has nothing to do with that. There's no medication. You just have to, and it takes a lot of mental concentration. And you got to do it all the time, every day. And I realized that, and so I've begun to do that every day, and it's helped. Oh, my God, it's helped so much. So
I'm so happy for you, Lynn. This is wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I have still a lot to work on, and the ones that require writing are the ones that I need the most, and that's where I need some help. And I talked to my therapist last week, and I told him to go through this, and he was a little taken aback because they're competitors. And I said, if you don't do this, I'm quitting you. And because it's helped me, and you're not giving me any direction or doing anything, and I need help. So that's where we're at right now. That's why I wanted those two things that you gave me before.
Yeah. But okay, so I just wanted to follow. So the exercise that you're doing, is it mindfulness?
Yeah.
Is it feel your feelings? Which one is
both,
it? Mindfulness?
Both of them. Both
okay.
of them.
Okay.
Both of them. Both of
gotcha.
Them. The first two were both of them.
So 3.4 is mindfulness and 3.7 is feel your feelings. And those
yeah.
are good. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm hanging up now.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. Bye. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm just going to say one. I'm going to hold you on the phone for just a little bit longer to tell you one thing. Remember what Steve Ozanich says. I don't know if you've read his book, but it's a great, great book. But what he says is remember that it's not linear. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days. And remember what Alan Gordon says, which is you want to be outcome independent. It's great to feel good, but just, you know, it's a process. You found some great tools, and I'm just really happy for you.
Yeah, he said that. And one thing he said somewhere along the line is when I'm a perfectionist, and somewhere later in one of his exercises, he says, don't hit on that. It's okay this way, and it's okay that way. It's okay regardless of which way it goes. It's okay. And so I've been pushing that, and that works too. It's
good
okay. It's okay, either way.
Good to
so
hear.
Don't pressure yourself. And that's in a later exercise, and I don't remember where it is, but that's been working also.
Cool.
So.
All right, well, thanks for staying up, and I guess we'll see you next week at 8:30. For the early show, the pre-recording.
yeah, okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that was really exciting. I mean, I think the scariest moment in all in the entire podcast, might have been her earlier on when she kind of called in, and I think she was very distressed by something that was going over. Maybe it was someone different.
Yeah.
I don't recall. But I'm really glad to hear that she's in a better spot. How are others doing? Bruce just joined us. Welcome, Bruce.
Hi, Bruce.
Thank you. Here I am.
Yeah.
I had to crash my Mac and reboot it because the mouse froze up.
Mm.
So there's an excuse.
Excellent.
Bruce, the bungee jumper, is this true?
Bungee jumper? No, I'm afraid of heights.
I am glad to hear that.
I couldn't trust the equipment. I hold on to the rocks. I hold on to the rocks so hard that
no
I
kidding.
Don't come off because I'm afraid.
That's smart.
How did he get that name as the bungee jumper? I still don't get that.
Oh, well, that's just an adventure sport, and it's being associated with me by association.
All right, since you do the rock
category,
climbing.
That category, right. You know, or hang gliding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could be a hang glider. I could be a...
Many different things.
Yeah, downhill, motocross, trail biking, mountain biking. There's another adventure.
And you are a big biker, but I want to keep us talking about stuff that's going to be relevant for our listeners. The Stock Trader in the chat room. So we've had a great chat room going on recently, which has been wonderful. Stock Trader just says, lose the fear. Enjoy asked, does mindfulness require a calm and quiet environment? I thought that was very, very interesting. Does anyone have any thoughts on that? I actually have a friend, a Buddhist, or at least influenced by these things, and he's been teaching me actually walking meditation, which Enjoy mentioned in the chat room just now. And so I don't think it does, but I don't know.
I try and do that when I'm doing the dishes because I'm not a natural dish doer. So if I'm not doing something useful besides dishes, I get a little antsy. So it really helps, you know, just to concentrate on every movement, concentrate on every feeling that you're having, and just for once get out of your mind and into your body and into the environment, kind of. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm, like I said on the chat, I'm no expert on mindfulness, but that's my understanding. And that works for me. Just do housework mindfully. Do anything that you're doing mindfully. Just pay attention. Be in the present. Yeah.
Good stuff. I think I must feel a need to make a big deal of it because I always set aside a certain period of time when I can delve deeply into the different feelings associated with different areas of my body and the emotions they symbolize or relate to. So, the work ethic never dies. I still try and make it into a project.
I'm thinking that.
That's funny. That's great. I have to say, I really love what you said about washing dishes. Just the idea that you may be a mindfulness expert if you can think to do mindfulness while you're washing the dishes. I'm in the Bruce camp. For me, I make it into too big of a deal, and I think I just need to scale it down and just enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think I was programmed by my parents to wash the dishes like an extension of their will. So I do it involuntarily. It's like, I guess that's where you at borderline, you start getting on the border of neurosis. Too well trained. But are we hearing anything on the chat regarding the recovery program?
So Stock Trader was talking about I stay in the present, letting go of the past and not worrying about the future. In some sense, this is very much the recovery program because section 3.4 in part 2 has a section called mindfulness. And so that is, you know, teaching you one way of being mindful and doing the meditation. But we did say that we were going to talk today about reframing the meaning of the pain. That's part of part one and working towards outcome independence. Shall we do that? I mean, what I like about these steps is that they are classic TMS healing. Like if you want to think about how to do it, this is like the pure educational approach. It's good stuff.
I think reframing is so important. I don't know if I totally understand what Ellen Gordon is saying, because I've just been messing around with the program. I've just been sort of picking through it and seeing what I like and not what I don't, and I have to now settle down and just go through it methodically. But that reframing thing, that just hit me because to me it's everything. I mean, he's saying you can't look at the pain as an enemy to get rid of it. You know, that's my understanding. I mean, it's a messenger. It's talking to you. It's saying you need to pay attention to what's going on inside you. So in a way, it's your friend. I mean, yes, you want the pain to go away, but you want to go. You don't want it to just disappear and leave you with all the problems that you had before. You want it to teach you what it has to teach you.
then you mean reframing it as a friend rather than an enemy, as an adversary, rather than an adversary, approaching it as a friend.
I think it's just like physical pain. If you have physical pain that's caused, I mean, you tripped and you hurt your ankle and it's really killing you, you have to stop, you have to think about this, you have to rest it, you have to go to the doctor, find out from x-rays what's really going on, that kind of thing. You can't just ignore it. So in a sense, it's your friend, because if you kept walking on that leg, you might end up being crippled for life. It's the same sort of thing, only with TMS pain, it comes from, it's an internal thing. You know, something.
It's like that lyric, lyric by that group called Spirit, did a lot of interesting things with modalities early on. They say it's nature's way of telling you something's wrong.
Exactly.
That's one of the lyrics of that song that they wrote. And that characterizes what TMS pain is. It tells you something's out of equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's something is in disequilibrium. It needs to be corrected.
And so the question is, can you thank it? Can you say, okay, thank you for the message. Thank you. You know, I needed to know that there was something which was upset. I needed to know that there was something that I needed to work on. And then now I'm going to think psychologically, but I'm not going to be afraid of you. I'm not going to fight you. I have to befriend you because in some sense, it seems like the theme of what he's saying is that it wants you to fight it. It wants you to be afraid of it. It wants you to obsess about it and to think about it all the time. Is it going to get better? Is it going to get worse? What can I do about it? What do I do? Like, I was rereading one of the threads on the importance of exploring childhood experience. And there was one person where there was a newcomer, and you could tell just from her energy that she was in the midst of it, that her fear had her, that the TMS was kind of in control at that moment in her life. And what she needs to do is she needs to reframe the meaning of the pain, that she is consumed by her fear. She is consumed by her pain, and she needs to let go and relax and say, okay, thank you for this warning. Thank you for this reminder. And then move on.
Because the thing of it is that I think a lot of people in the society today, and for most TMSers, we would keep running until we ran ourselves right into the ground if something didn't stop us and say, you know, you've got to settle down. You've got to settle down, pay attention to something other than your ambition, your career, your, you know, making your kids, getting your kids into an Ivy League college, whatever the heck it is that you're on about, right? You have to stop and pay attention to your own life and your own body and your own self, your own psyche. Sometimes you have to do some maintenance. You can't just keep running on a treadmill.
I think it's like Dr. Sarnoff
says. Beautifully said.
TMS patients are like the kind of people who will get into a gym and go through every station in the gym back to back through 43
yep.
stations and not stop until they drop.
Yep.
So one thing which I thought was interesting about the Breaking the Pain Cycle article, and I have to say that as I look at the server data and what search terms people use. This is actually a very popular essay that people will find us on Google via this. And they'll look specifically for this essay, sometimes with Alan Gordon's name on it. But in it, he talks about behaviorism. He talks about reinforcement learning. Did anyone pick up on that?
Or about the rats who... the extinction burst when a...
He talks about the extinction burst later on, but first let's just talk a little bit about how that works, because I think it's a tough concept, the behaviorism and reinforcement learning, and it's to me, it's an interesting interpretation of distraction and how the pain distracts us. In the sense that, so he's drawing on scientific research that we've seen an awful lot of in the 20th century, and it continues to be a foundation of psychological research. It's called operant conditioning. It's when it's kind of stimulus response style learning. So he uses the example that if a rat runs, so here's Bruce's rat. If it runs on a wheel and then we reward it, we give it a reward for running on the wheel, then well, it's probably going to run more. And the psychologist, now I'm not a scholar of psychology, so I may make some small errors, but I think I have the main ideas at least well enough to help get what Alan Gordon is saying in this essay. The psychologist whose name is associated most with this is B.F. Skinner. He was the one who discovered this sort of operant or instrumental conditioning, that if you reward an animal, as we are an animal, and as you think about the unconscious, you should be thinking about the older functions of our brain, the paleomammalian brain. So these very simple ways of understanding how the brain works can be helpful in that, this kind of Skinnerian behaviorism. So I've talked for a while about all this weird psychological theory. What does it have to do with TMS? Alan Gordon is saying it has everything to do with TMS, because in some sense, this is the unconscious at work. The unconscious is part of this older system in the brain of like the rat, another mammal, has similar brain structures. He doesn't talk about that, but this is what I get from it, at least. And the brain is distressed. This old part of our brain is distressed, and it's scared because there are unacceptable, very, very scary emotions going on. It's terrified by this, and it wants to know what it can do. And so maybe it gets tense. And again, not all of this is in Alan's essay. Alan and I talked about this way, way, way back when as he was writing this, and we kind of tossed this idea around a little bit. We actually ran it by Dr. Schubiner. So this is primarily my recollection of this conversation. But so your unconscious brain is distressed. It's scared because it knows that these ideas are coming up. It may come up, may break forth to the surface, and it gets tense, and then maybe that tension leads to a little bit of pain. It decreases blood flow, and that starts kind of the TMS pain. And then you start thinking about it. Maybe you start worrying about it. And all of a sudden, your attention has shifted. You're not thinking about all of these scary things, all of these scary emotions. You're thinking about something else. You're thinking about your pain, and that makes your unconscious brain happy. That's just like the rat who is running on his little running wheel getting a treat. That's where the reinforcement learning comes in, the operant conditioning. Your little brain, the older parts of your brain, the limbic system, the paleomammalian brain, is receiving reinforcement for distracting you. It says, hey, this is good when I cut this blood flow down. Now I'm going to cut the blood flow down more frequently. I'm going to do this all the time. I am going to make you scream in physical pain because physical pain is so much better than emotional pain. I'm not going to let you know about how angry you are and how unacceptably angry you are, you know, how it sees the world. It's a primitive brain. I'm not going to let you see this. I'm going to make your back hurt instead. I'm going to protect you. So it's kind of an interesting way of conceptualizing how distraction works in TMS, is that there's part of your brain which is being instrumentally conditioned, or operant conditioning is at work, it is training itself to control the autonomic nervous system or the neuropeptides to cut off blood flow and cause you physical pain. So anyway, that's kind of just something that I wanted to highlight, which I thought might be a little bit difficult and potentially worth bringing up.
Yes, so the unconscious mind, as this theory suggests, is autotelic and self-referential and operates according to laws that do not appear to the rational part of our mind as being logical. They have a certain kind of logic, the logic of reinforcement, but on a very basal level, almost a biochemical level, and without much sensor mechanism entering into any of this process. That's why what I mean by self-referential and autotelic. It's self-governing. That's how it gets out of control and creates an imbalance, isn't it?
Because it's in some sense it's a simple mechanism, much like, you know, a tiny little rat's brain. They have many of the same regions. They have an amygdala. They have a hippocampus. So they have some of these same emotional conditioning circuits in there. Is that what you were saying, Bruce?
And we retain them,
yes,
from our paleo mammalian past.
Exactly.
That's like, what is that famous aphorism? Ontology recapitulates phylogeny. So we still contain all of those earlier states of consciousness and awareness that, let's say, a cougar or a rat or a raccoon has. But we've retained that. But we don't necessarily have very good access to it from the rational part of our mind or control. It says, bug off. I've got the situation in hand. And I can just keep doing this as long as
and
I want
it, and
to.
It says,
it's a pleasure.
Before you had this pain, I was terrified. And now that you have, because I was terrified that these unacceptable emotions would come out, and now that you have the pain, I am soothed. I feel okay. The world is better. So I'm going to keep protecting you. I'm going to, and a lot of people think that, you know, one way of understanding the unconscious brain is as this older portion of the brain, this simpler operant conditioning or classical conditioning, also model of the brain.
Well, I think Alan Gordon in one of the audio clips talks about how the primitive mind is like a chimpanzee behind a cage when little kids start throwing peanuts at it. And
you
can tell by the way it's acting that if it could get at the little kid, it would just rip it apart.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple kind of logic that you see in a tiger when it gets mad at you and just bites you, you know?
Yeah. It's old stuff.
Yeah, well, like people let little kids play with pit bulls. You know, a current case here in the Bay Area, not a very smart thing to do, because if the kids are fooling around with an animal with that kind of ability, capabilities, and they just trigger it, it doesn't have that sensor mechanism.
Yeah. So when you think about something like this, if you want to train a rat to run on a wheel, you train you give it a treat when it runs on the wheel. If you want to train your unconscious to cause the TMS, you give it a treat by distracting it or having fear when it causes the pain. Sadly, this may be a somewhat disturbing metaphor, but I used to tutor kids with learning disabilities, and one technique which is popular in that realm when dealing with kids with autism is called applied behavioral analysis. It's very effective. It's the way that you can save these kids from harming themselves. When they don't bang their head against the wall, you give them a Skittle. But that's the same idea of reinforcement learning when they do the good behavior, you reinforce that learning. When they don't do the good behavior, you don't reinforce it. So if they want to get the reinforcement, they have to be good. They have to not inflict harm upon themselves. So if we're conceptualizing TMS here as a form of behaviorist learning, then we are, what does that mean? It means that when you obsess about your symptoms, you are reinforcing the symptoms, because that obsession about the symptoms is the distraction which your unconscious mind is craving. So if you think about the TMS, you make the TMS stronger. And the way to think about the TMS the most is by being afraid of the TMS. Mm-hmm. So fear also, this model explains how fear makes our TMS so much worse, because that feeds into the whole pain cycle of distraction. So then the next question is, how do you get rid of it? Well, breaking a conditioned response is hard. It takes a long time. You just have to, the rat is running on the treadmill and it's waiting for the snack, but sometimes you don't give it the snack when it runs and sometimes you do, so it just keeps on running, and you just have to keep on not reinforcing the TMS by not giving it what it wants again and again and again. So it explains why TMS healing sometimes takes a while, because it takes a while to retrain that portion of your brain. And then finally, there's this idea of the extinction burst, which you were talking about, Bruce, before, which is something which is understood in the branch of psychology that studies reinforcement learning or operant conditioning, which is that if the rat has been trained by reinforcement learning to run on the wheel, and then you stop feeding the rat the snack every time it runs on the wheel, it'll probably slow down and maybe not run a little bit, but at a certain point it says, hey, I really want this snack, I'm going to run like crazy, and it starts tearing up the wheel, running as fast as it can. That phenomenon is known as an extinction burst, and it's something that we see a lot in TMS healing. People stop indulging the unconscious, and then all of a sudden the unconscious freaks out and it gets scared and it says, hey, I'm going to have an extinction burst. I'm going to give this guy all sorts of back pain. I'm going to break his will. I'm going to get it back to the distracted version of him that I knew and I loved before.
Yes, I've had a couple of extinction bursts in the last month. What I know to be extinction bursts now, because I just use certain muscles in my leg on the weight machine, and then at night I started getting these horrible cramps, just like it used to be way back when. And then I got frequent urination in conjunction with the cramps. And this went on for one night, but then when I got up the next day, it was like I was refreshed. I was actually through it and on to another stage in the recovery process. And just a few days ago, I was out for a walk. I thought I could walk because it didn't hurt. But when I came back, it started to really hurt. I got sciatica and lower back pain. And I said, what is this? Where is this coming from? And then a phone call came through in my pack. And I started talking to a friend of mine in L.A. And mm-hmm. I sat down on a fence. And I was so absorbed in that conversation with him that when I got up and started to walk again, absolutely no pain whatsoever.
And there you are giving it the attention that it craves,
yeah,
that it needs for the reinforcement.
I was distracted. Yeah, yeah. It had come up and it rose up and it started to bother me like it came out of the blue. Like mm-hmm. I'm not, yeah, and it's obvious that as I get closer to being, oh, and after that episode, I got a whole bunch more flexibility in my leg and less pain, and way more pain-free range of motion. So obviously it was like it needed to do that at the end because it was losing its grip.
Mm-hmm. It's that extinction burst idea.
Yeah. So I think I understand from my own experience what he means. I think a lot of people, though, sometimes have extinction bursts and it freaks them out so bad it really gets them focused again, obsessed again with the pain, and thus the cycle continues.
Mm-hmm.
Although they're really close to breaking through, their fear or anxiety won't let them off the hook.
Enjoy. I'm dying to hear what you have to say about all of this. Have you been following along? I hope it wasn't too academic.
Well, actually, I've sort of been on the chat with.
Oh, in the chat room.
Yeah, there. The only thing that I have to say is, like, that stuff is all very useful. I've had a lot of foster kids and social workers are always telling me to do things like that with them. But personally, I mean, of course you reward good behavior. What else would you do? And just the tiniest little reminder of behavior that you're not that crazy about, if you're rewarding good behavior, that tiny reminder reminds the person not to do whatever that is, you know, because getting mad just stirs them up. So I think we have to apply these principles to ourselves, and because, like you say, we're a little kid inside, we're a chimpanzee, you know, we're all these levels of creation, aren't we? And I think that's really interesting. It's a little too scientific for me, a lot of the stuff that you were saying. But there were a few times there when I thought you just really nailed it without any jargon at all. So I heard those.
Good to hear.
I heard the whole thing. Yeah, it was good, though. I mean, let's face it, we're all different kinds of people here. And so, yeah, we got to be balanced. So that was good stuff. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. I think that's something that Alan's very good at, is he takes these concepts and he makes them simpler. Like he says, there's this paragraph where he says, unless you read behaviorism treatises in your spare time, this probably means nothing to you. Well, now you know some of the things. So in terms of watching the clock, we've talked for a little bit about the second step. But let's talk a little bit maybe about the third, where we are talking about working towards outcome independence. Does anyone have any thoughts that they want to share on that? This is another, I think it's extremely practical, and I think it's basically saying, this is a classic idea in TMS circles, don't calendar watch. Don't think about how long is it going to be until you get better, because the more you focus on how long it's going to be, the longer it will take. They say a watched pot never boils, so don't watch the pot. Is what you need to do is you need to, because if you're focusing on it, that is reinforcing the pain cycle. Going back to the previous essay, it's reinforcing that behavior, and you don't want to do it, so don't give it the attention. It's absolutely peripheral. It doesn't matter. It's only there, as Enjoy was mentioning earlier on, to be a messenger to let you know that something's up.
I noticed on the forum the other day that one correspondent, I can't remember his name, was becoming into despair because he was suffering a setback in the SEP after 6 days. And yeah, he was already anxious about not making enough progress. And
right. That's
way too soon in the recovery process.
Yeah.
Unless you're one of these classic cases who just sees the light after one lesson.
Well, and even if you want to get better, you just have to say, okay, this is the way it is, you know? Like, I'd love to be one of those classic bees. Wouldn't we all? We'd all love to have $1 million in our pockets, but, you know, that's just not the way it works. So so you keep your head up and keep pressing forward.
And you focus on other aspects of your life that are positive and that are, you know, go do something fun. Be kind to yourself. As Alan Gordon says, and just TMS is a small part of your life unless you blow it out of all proportion, and if you do, it grows, you know. So yeah, this I think half the battle is to just start feeling like this is part of who I am. I'm a person who pushes him or herself pretty hard, and I take things pretty seriously. And one of the results of this is that I'm repressing a lot of stuff. And, you know, now I've got TMS, and oh well, you know, I'm sorting it, and I think I'll go bungee jump. Like Bruce, with Bruce.
Well, it's true, coming into contact with realized ultimate reality. Gets you away from this world sicklied over with the pale cast of thought, to quote Hamlet here. I didn't think I'd ever be able to do that, but...
Oh, you didn't think
you just scared me, though. Help me out. Simplify that a little bit for me and our listeners.
Well, I mean, there's such a thing as reality therapy, just going swimming in a cold stream.
Yeah.
It kind of gets you away from all of these all self-preoccupied, self-obsessed, narcissistic pursuits when you have to deal with real-world problems in a real-world context. Nature therapy, I guess you'd call it.
I think that's a great word for it. Real world therapy. Get out there and do something, and yeah, get your mind off it.
Be nice to yourself, you know. Be a good parent for your inner child, you know.
Yeah, I thought that that section that Alan included on generating self compassion was most important, because if you do that, you don't need to do all these other things. Because it fixed the problem to start with.
It would be a shortcut. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And I took out a picture of myself when I was five in first grade, an old black and white. And here I was building a box-like structure with blocks. And I had my tongue stuck out the way I used to whenever I would really try really hard, and I had this really repressed look on my face, and I remembered how I was angry then at the other kids who wouldn't follow the patterns, the architectural patterns that I conceived of, and they would do things emotionally, but I was already repressing, and I thought about what I would have told myself then. It really is an excellent lesson. Don't be so hard on yourself. It started already at six. You know, take it from me. I know where it leads. So just lighten up now. You're a kid. No, you don't need to take the whole world problems on your shoulders.
Exactly.
And where do you get that is from dealing with your parents, obviously, taking the world on your shoulder.
Well, they want you to grow up and be responsible, but you did, so now it's not time to be nice to yourself. Too responsible, maybe.
Exactly. So
you learned the lesson too well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how all that happens. So we've talked about generating self-compassion. Do people have any thoughts about what we would cover for next week as we begin to wrap up?
Dead silence. Well, I don't know. What kind of things is there? Like, what are our options here?
Well, since you had, Forrest, you went into all that technical talk about behaviorism, Skinnerism, and rewards. What about the science behind your inner child as a takeoff point, a point to lift off from?
I don't know. It sounded from Enjoy like maybe we needed to take a break from the science. And my inclination is to go through step by step.
Yeah,
you know, good to hear, good to hear. But we could do like 3.1 and 3.2, 3.1, 3.2, 3.3. Yeah, we could do like the next three sections maybe. How does that sound? Another thing that we could do is we are having some amazing threads recently with Chicken Bone. The ones about journaling and about feeling your feelings. So we could jump ahead. We could do section 3.7 on feeling your feelings, and then simultaneously we could also talk about some of those threads which are going on in the forum. Let's see if I can find their titles. The importance of addressing childhood issues, the later stuff, focusing on bodily sensations, Unknown Stuntman, and self-monitoring, the thread that I started. All three of those are really talking about learning about your emotions based on what you're feeling in the body. Would people be interested in doing a little sidetrack on that and then getting back on going through the Alan Gordon program, or do you want to keep going straight?
It sounds interesting to me, Forrest. Would you make a post and put that in it so that I don't promptly forget it?
I would be more than happy to.
Yeah, I know. I've been through that. That is a long one, that one.
Oh,
the
it's a long one. Yes.
I know.
I'll summarize it a little bit. How about that in the post?
Okay, good.
Then we got a plan. Any final thoughts anybody wants to bring up related to this stuff? I mean, I think these are just classic wisdom about what you focus on when you're doing it. You don't let it distract you. You don't let it take all your attention, because that's going to reinforce the TMS. You just enjoy your life. You say that this doesn't matter, and I'm just going to enjoy myself. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to hike a mountain because I want to hike a mountain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And remember, anxiety is TMS. I learned that 2 weeks ago, and I'm a true believer.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, it's just that I've had a lot of trouble with anxiety lately, and in a way, sort of all my life, but it's been getting quite severe. And I was thinking of it as a different thing, you know, and I was taking it very seriously. And then somebody said, and it might have been you, Forrest, anxiety is TMS. And I thought, it is TMS because it's trying to distract me from thinking about what it is I'm supposed to be thinking about, you know. Getting at the reality, like for example, I had a kind of an anxiety dream last night, and it was on a topic of something that is causing me some anxiety. There's no doubt about it, but you can't do anything about it in a dream. What I needed to do was, when I was awake, think, now can I do something? If so, what do I do? If not, you know, what's the philosophy that's going to get me past this thing? And what can I do to make my life better, even if I am having this difficulty right now? So a lot of different thoughts, rather than obsessing about something that you really can't think of a thing to do about. Find something that you can do about it, which may be just allow yourself to forget it. Let the universe take care of it. If it doesn't care, why should you? Let it go.
I know I've given that kind of advice to people on the forum, and then I've become chagrined because I noticed that the people I were talking to were bedridden for like 6 weeks or 2 months in pain, laying down and can't go out. And I don't know what to say to them at that point. Where is there a weakness in the armor of TMS that they can begin attacking at that stage in their their experience of the condition, the syndrome? They can't do much about it when it's like that. Is that why Dr. Sarno suggested just giving them a strong painkiller at that time to give them some distance so they can start thinking?
I tend to think, I've never talked to him about this, but I tend to think that the painkiller is there. The first thing that you have to do in TMS healing, I think, is that you have to kind of get your mind straight. You have to not let your fear rule you. You have to be the one who kind of makes the decisions and says, who can put some distance between you and your fear, that can recognize the fear but not have it rule you. My hunch is that the painkillers would be most helpful for people when the pain is controlling them so much that they just need anything so that they can get better. I think I've gotten that impression maybe from Matthew, who's gotten painkillers from Dr. Sarno. And it was, you know, he knows that what needs to be done, and this is so that he can do the work. That's kind of my take on the painkiller. I've always felt like even if I were bedridden forever, I could maybe, you know, even if I had a lot of pain, it feels like the human brain is just able to still find some life in that. I mean, if you think of some of these inspirational stories of people who have so little and still they find joy in life, it feels like that joy is a choice that we can make, and we can decide to find that joy if we can get ourselves in that positive attitude. I don't know if that helps at all.
Forrest,
yep.
I wrote a book while I was bedridden. I used a spiral notebook, and I wrote it longhand. I was recovering from surgery. I figured I'd make good use of the time.
There you go.
Feel sorry for myself, yeah.
My experience of that is, so I used to have pain in my postural muscles, which pain in your postural muscles are a bit of a problem, because whenever you want to sit up, you know, and have a posture, those are the muscles which are going to make it happen. They hold the head up, they hold the back up. And so my understanding from having been trained about repetitive strain injuries is that I needed to rest them and let them heal. So I spent an awful lot of time lying down trying to manage this pain. I had prism glasses so that I could be lying down and kind of look down my body at a book so that I could do that. But they didn't even work because somehow my postural muscles were getting tense. TMS is weird that way. But I totally know what you mean. Like I think that I started feeling this way when I felt like, you know, like I can still, as long as I'm not starving, you know, I can still enjoy my life thinking about thoughts. And during that time, I taught myself how to think in a more disciplined manner, I used to like journaling. And so I taught myself how to focus so that I could journal without writing. And still have that structure of moving forward. So, yeah, I think we are capable of that. Thanks, Joy.
Okay. Yeah, good information. I think that with somebody who's in some real chronic difficulty, that then there's nothing you can do about it. All you can do, really, is be there. You can share whatever wisdom you may have, but you don't really know what they're going through. So really all you can do is respect their situation, learn from their situation, you know. I mean, put them in the position of telling you how they're coping and how they feel about it and that sort of thing. And you know, just have a real conversation with them. It isn't necessarily something that you can help somebody with any other way. Just be in it with them. If that makes sense.
I do recall that when I had my herniated disc, so-called, in 2002, that there were like three places I could go, three or four, the grocery store, the bank, the gas station. There I've named three. I can't think of what the other one was, the doctor's office. And beyond those three or four venues, I was just basically sitting there taking it, hurting, laying down and hurting, getting up and hurting. And that went on for about 6 weeks and it began to subside. But I can't imagine what it would be like to be like that for a year, say.
You'd write a book. You'd have to.
You'd do something.
Yeah.
What I discovered was that when I was in the very peak of my pain, I could do one thing, and that was put together model airplanes. Mm-hmm. And so I got some down that I had stashed away and just started doing them, and I didn't realize what I was doing was distracting myself. That's why I could do it, because I had to focus so much on the construction and the manual and the glue and the files and all of this stuff, that it, when I remember when I did that, the pain went away.
You broke the pain cycle.
Yeah, exactly. But I did it independently, of course, without a therapist or any kind of TMS knowledge whatsoever. But I noticed that I came back from that by making more and more models, and I got more obsessed with it, like it was the be-all and end-all. And I didn't realize it was a substitute for whatever I was obsessing about that the pain was distracting me from. I've noticed a lot with distraction. That seems to be a key to breaking the cycle.
Say more about that, how it's a key to breaking the cycle.
Oh, distracting yourself?
I see. Gotcha. Yep.
Yeah, I noticed like when I was really hurting this last time in 2008, if I went for a walk, it would hurt all the time walking. But if I stopped and I took out my Nikon and put it on a tripod and started going through all the menus and submenus and composing a shot digitally, when I'd pick up the camera again after the picture, the pain would be gone. The same as that telephone call from my friend the other day. It's obvious the distraction, it distracts you back into the real world, away from this kind of self-enclosed, self-referential loop. And that's where distraction is important, because it gets you back to the real world. It's like someone tapping you on the shoulder.
I've heard the phrase changing the channel on the pain. Like it wants you to pay attention to it. That feeds it. There's that old story of and perhaps we can end on this because it's time. But there's the old story of the Indian, a grandfather who's telling his son that inside all of us there are two wolves. And they are locked in combat. And one of them is the wolf of goodness and selflessness and generosity and virtue. And the other one is the wolf of greed and, you know, jealousy and hate. And the grandson looks up to the grandfather and says, well, which one of these two wolves wins in this battle inside of us? And the grandfather said, well, it's the one that you feed. And it feels like the same way with TMS, you know, which wolf wins? It's the one that you feed. Is it the wolf of pain, or is it the wolf of enjoying your life? It's the one that you feed.
There's so many life lessons in all of this.
Amen. Yeah. Well, thanks for helping to wrap it up. I guess we'll call that another podcast, and talk to you all in a week.